Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome back to a new episode of the QuakeCast. And I'm happy to announce that we usually don't deal, you know, negotiate with terrorists, but we were able to make an exception in this case because RC is so important to this broadcast that we got him, we secured his release. And welcome back to the world, RC.
Whew, thanks, guys. It was a rough week, let me tell you. I was locked in a closet, and luckily you guys gave them the 350 and a Whopper, so it was worked tough. Out.
It was a stretch. welcome back. JCR did a great job filling in for you. We had a great time.
Yeah, thanks, JCR.
Yeah, he's the man. Came in right when we needed him. So today we have an award-winning Quake mapper, Gift Mocker. So we've wanted to have him on the show for a while, and now he's here.
Yeah, he came out with the Brimstone Mine, I believe was the name of that one, right?
Yeah, and, Gameplay of the Year, I think.
Gameplay of the Year is a cool little map. On top of that, though, I believe Forgotten Sepulchre, which he was also involved in, also won Best Map, right?
Sepulchre, so. But yes, Forgotten Sepulchre. I was an altar boy. I know sepulchres.
I always mispronounce it, but he's a two-time winner, as they say.
That's right.
But in addition to Quake mapping, Dump Truck, did you know that Giftmocker actually was a pretty competitive gamer at one point, so much so that he was involved with esports with Counter-Strike and StarCraft 2? That's pretty cool, right?
Bomb has been planted.
You wouldn't believe how many times I heard that in that closet. It was weird.
Let's get out of here.
This was back in 2016, I think. 2015. I stumbled into this sort of Quake 2 Cafe website, which was pretty dead at that point when I arrived. There were a few characters still there, you know, making a few maps, but the single player scene was pretty dead. But for some reason, I just decided I wanted to make a Quake 2 map. And that's how I got started with this hobby, if you will.
Hmm. And so was that NetRadiant or GTK that was your editor of choice back then?
Yeah. So unfortunately, I started with Quark. Actually, the only character that was sort of active at that forum was a Quark user. So he recommended the Quark editor to me, which in hindsight probably wasn't the best option. It's a pretty cool editor, but it does have its limitations for sure. But I made a few maps. I learned sort of how to make your basic Quake map. As I said, there were a few guys who could still sort of help me get through the process of making a map. So I stayed there for a while, actually. Ended up making that unit, the crash site unit, which, you know, looking back, it actually looks better than I remembered it. My phone goes off here.
No worries.
But again, this scene was just completely dead when it comes to single player for Quake 2. So eventually I started looking elsewhere into Quake 1. I know Simon was releasing some videos on Arcane Dimensions, which was actually getting spread on this forum as well. So we were, you know, the few of us who were there mapping got excited about Arcane Dimensions at that point, and just started to explore other venues. So I didn't actually know about the Quake 1 scene at that point, that it was much bigger than the Quake 2 scene.
So how many maps or units did you end up doing for Quake 2 before you moved over to Quake 1?
So I made about three single player maps for Quake 2. I made a few deathmatch maps, and then I moved on to this unit, the crash site unit, and sort of finished that as a final project before moving on. So that was about it. So about maybe seven maps or so, seven or eight maps of Quake 2 before moving on. There was also a weird sort of limitation with Quark and Quake 2. You couldn't make a map that was more than 1,500 brushes for some reason. It was a compiler issue. So you had to stay within that range. So when you wanted to make something more complex, you couldn't you know, realize all of those things. You had to cut corners. You had to make a room, you know, square or more boring to have a really cool bridge in another area. So you had to work with this limitation. So that's one of the reasons why I switched as well. Thinking back, we sort of tried to get to the bottom of this problem with Quark. So we sort of scoured the Quark forum, tracked down the developer for Quark and asked him a bunch of questions if he knew why this was an issue with the editor. He didn't have a solution. But that's when I sort of found one of MFX's maps on the forum. He posted a bunch of pictures on one of his maps. So I started asking him a bunch of questions, like, wow, this map looks amazing. How did you make such an impressive map in Quark? I can only make a map with 1,500 brushes. And he said, it's for Quake 1. And, yeah.
So boom. Mind blown.
Yeah, another reason. For switching.
That's cool. Yeah. So the question I have for you is that since you got your start with Quake 2, I see in your bio here that you said you started playing PC games with, you know, Wolf 3D and Doom and Quake and stuff. So why did you end up waiting so long to get into mapping?
Yeah, so my gaming interest is primarily, or has for the most part been as a competitive gamer. I've been into competitive games for the most part of my my sort of gaming career, if you will, or my gaming interest. So I've not been into game development. That started sort of just recently, getting more interested into game development or level designing, not really game developing, but game design. So yeah, my background is primarily as a, sort of a gamer, and I was a competitive Counter-Strike player at one point. This was back in 2004. So played a few big tournaments.
And that was just for the audience. That was 1.6, correct?
Yeah. So that was the old classic Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
The good one.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. So I had a pretty cool journey with Counter-Strike. I was very obsessed with that game. We played, you know, just hours after hours, and just was very into that one. I got to travel to a couple of big tournaments, CPL Dallas. I don't know how much you know about competitive Counter-Strike, but
Not a lot, but I've definitely heard of CPL, obviously.
Yeah,
so that, you know, if you traveled halfway around the world, I'm sure it was a big deal.
Yeah, so CPL was the big one that was being held in the States for the most part, and that was sort of the World Cup or the World Championship of Counter-Strike at that point. It's different now, I think, but we sort of qualified for one of those big tournaments. We got to travel to Dallas and play at that stage. So that was cool. Definitely a cool experience. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, definitely. Now, remind me, have you played or have you made any single or multiplayer Quake 1 levels? Have you done any of those?
No.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, I guess it is. But I never played Quake multiplayer or not at that level, at least.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, okay.
I haven't been that much into making multiplayer maps for some reason. I don't know.
And it is, you know, that scene is very small. You know, it's having a resurgence right now, But yeah, I don't blame you, because a lot of people, like I went on Funk and my first couple maps coming back, you know, after years were multiplayer, just because, well, that's what I like. You know, hey, we'll try these. And they're like, hey, those look nice. The screenshots are great. Crickets.
Yeah. You know, I think it's hard to sort of break into the scene as well. I mean, they don't really accept new maps, do they? The people who are really good at Quake World. I mean, they still play the old maps, which I think is, they're pretty bad, actually. If you look at, you know, DM4, I mean, just playing DM4, I think, I don't know, design-wise, as a multiplayer map, I don't find it that impressive when it comes to a layout, for example. I mean, I played one of my friends who's actually pretty good at Quake World, and you spend most of your time in the lava, actually, when you play DM4, and you face someone who's...
Yeah.
You
know, exactly.
Well, that's fun, right? Being in the
lava. Yeah, yeah, that's fun. You're just down there screaming and but they, you know, they still play those original maps. That's, I guess, that's what they got accustomed to. And it's hard to break in, I think, to a multiplayer scene.
No, yeah. I would agree. We talk about that a lot. I think I've talked it on past shows. Yeah, the multiplayer scene has always been strange. Even back in the 90s, it was like, we're going to play the same map every day, 24/7, forever. And all these years later, that's still the case. It's very strange.
Yeah, and it's the same with Counter-Strike. You know, we didn't get any new maps. We played that for a long time. 1.6, I can't remember a single new map that was sort of introduced, maybe one or two over the course of, you know, 10 years of just playing the same five or six maps. So it's difficult, I think.
Yeah, I look at some of these mappers that have done source maps over the years and just trying to, you know, this stellar work that nobody plays. It's just kind of sad. It's kind of pitiful. What was your favorite one, just as a player? I don't mean to digress, but what was your favorite 1.6 map, or what was your, you know, map that you were dominant on?
Right. I think Nuke was a good map for me. I was sort of a defensive support player, more of the team player than the aggressive person who sort of go first and take the first opening frag and get the game going. So I was more of a support player. So Nuke was good for me. It's a very tactical map when it comes to strategic movement, both as, you know, you play as a counter-terrorist and you play as a terrorist. You have different objectives, for those who don't know. That was a good map for me. Other maps were worse. We had a map called Aztec. I don't know if you remember that one.
I remember it. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a terrible map, especially if you were playing as the terrorists, because just attacking on this map was so difficult. You could really, you know, shut down the map with snipers and holding your ground as counter-terrorists. But yeah, so Nuke, I would say, probably favorite map.
Cool. I have such nostalgia for that game, because I never played competitively, but for many, I'd say a couple years there, every Friday night, you know, my buddies and I would get on and just play casually. And it was those are some of the best gaming times I had. Although worst Counter-Strike player, like RC, worse than my waiter days. But it was more of the friendship and the fellowship with my buddies and just kind of being the bullet sponge for everybody else. That was even my kind of, some of my MOs, I'd be like a decoy and go and just get killed, because I was gonna die anyway, because I'm pretty terrible at the game. So
yeah, I mean, back then you had different kinds of players. Now, I think when I look at, you know, modern Counter-Strike, I think everyone is a monster when it comes to the game. Back then, we had players like, you know, had different roles. You had players who were insanely good at aiming, and then we had others who were, you know, better at communicating and making sure everything was sort of kept together and things like that. But,
What was your role in the team there?
It was mostly the guy who you know, had good communications and making sure we did the right choices when we were sort of playing. I was pretty solid. I usually got my frag that I was supposed to get. But I wasn't this sort of mad fragging player, more of a supporting role. Yeah.
Well, it says here, in addition to CSGO, you also play some StarCraft too. You want to go into that just a little bit, because we don't get to talk about that game much here.
No, right. So I guess after playing Counter-Strike competitively, I still had that itch to scratch when it comes to competitive games. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't want to play CSGO. I didn't like that game as much as I liked the old one. So I started getting into more strategic games, and StarCraft 2 was one of those games. And got pretty obsessed with that game as well. Spent a lot of hours playing it, and got, you know, fairly decent at playing it. I got to a mid-masters level, if that tells you anything.
Yeah.
So
is it higher than, like, say, a diamond rank? Because I know they had the ranks in that game as well.
Yeah, so it's one step above diamond.
Okay, gotcha. Basically.
So what that means is you know how to play the game, but you're still pretty bad at it. So it takes, it sounds crazy, but it takes a long time to learn how to play StarCraft 2 properly. And even if you're a Masters player, you're not great anyway. You're just kind of playing the game as you should play it, using a build order and then, you know, mechanically playing correctly.
Yeah, the interesting thing with the RTS genre, it's pretty underrated when it comes to esports. It may not be the most exciting thing to watch, but it's sort of like chess, where you have to plan your moves ahead, you know, and sort of predict what the other guy is going to do in whatever situation. Where, you know, with Counter-Strike, great game, but you're pretty much thinking on your feet. You can have a light plan, but most of the time, if you know, you're going to be thinking on your feet and fragging a guy and taking him out and trying to complete the objective. But StarCraft 2, you got to have all these different plans of action in your head to go to, right?
Yeah, for sure. But there are similarities between the games, I would say. I think when it comes to gathering information from the enemy team or from your opponent, I think that's one of the key things for both Counter-Strike and for, you know, StarCraft 2 in this example. Because the more you know about your enemy, the better you can adjust your own sort of movement and your decisions. So StarCraft 2 is very much about scouting your opponent and making sure you know what he's up to, so you can adjust. But I understand what you're saying. It's a little bit different for sure. But there are, yeah.
Well, hey, to be fair, you would know better than I would. I'm not competitive, so I didn't make Master, unfortunately.
Yes, I'm kind of like the brute force gamer. RTS is a little beyond my reach. It's like, where am I clicking? I just panic. It's like, forget, throw all the strategy out the door, because I'm just panicking. Like, clicking, what's this guy doing? I think the last real RTS, and I'm not joking, was probably Warcraft 2. And
right, then,
so that just shows you like how invested I am in RTS.
Yeah, I remember the day I actually quit Warcraft 2, because I was playing it online. I was doing fairly well, and there was a point where I played a day where I played like three or four games of it, and I got beat in these like really terrible ways. Like one guy, you know, completely ogre rushed me, and some other things happened to it. I was just like, I don't think I could play anymore. I can't keep up.
You know, I did misspeak though, RC. I played Pikmin. So
does that count?
It is. It's an RTS, dude.
Okay. Great game though. Great game.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah. back to Giftmucker, and I want to pull you back to Quake a little bit, because you have your hand in you know, a landmark release for Quake.
Yes.
One single player, and you also are, and as we mentioned in the intro, which you didn't hear yet, you're an award-winning mapper in the Quake community. You won.
It's true.
The 2017 best map gameplay. I knew I was going to get it wrong. Best map gameplay for the Brimstone Mine. And I will say, just and I know RC's played it.
Yep.
But and I watched him play it. It was fun, because I had already played it, and you know that usually never happens. I usually see you play something and then play it. But I had played it before, and what a fantastic map! I remember literally playing that map for the first time, and it was just a breath of fresh air. You had some really great set piece. I mean, across the whole map, there were tons of great set pieces. So if anyone hasn't played this, it's part of the Jam 9 pack, which is a Quoth, you know, uses the Quoth mod. All the maps are really cool, except for mine. Mine sucks. Don't play mine. But I had a really good time making that map, and then playing everybody's work was just so cool. So that pack is really one of the must plays, and your map is by far, you know, the must play map of that pack. So how did it feel to win an award, you know, a community award for mapping?
So that's a bit of a funny story. I think you know my sort of involvement with Simon and working with the Arcane Dimensions mod and all of that. So when I made my first sort of Quake maps, I usually had discussions with Simon. Simon is Sock, by the way, for those who don't know. When it came to, you know, tips and feedback on how to improve the map in general, I think he's got a lot of great ideas that, you know, I certainly didn't think about. So when it came to the Jam 9 map, I sort of finished the whole map, but I started sort of discussing with Simon what you could do to make the map better when it came to the gameplay department. And that's what I feel that he's really a master when it comes to level designing. He's really good at coming up with ideas for how to make a map play better. Gameplay wise. So he gave me a few ideas, and I started using those as inspiration for some of the things that you can see in the map. One of the things that he didn't like about the map was the first elevator that takes you up to the sort of main hub area, if you will, the giant elevator. And for me, my first thought was that this was just going to be a reverse Romero elevator, you know, goes up slowly, you add monsters gradually, and it becomes a challenge. But it's already been done. So his idea was basically, what if the elevator breaks down and you have to climb up in some other way? So that gameplay mechanic is actually more of an inspiration from him. So I shouldn't take all the credit for that map.
Well, you still had to do it.
Yeah, I still had to build a thing.
Yeah, I had to build a thing and pace it out. It is a cool idea, and I do remember that. Those little, cause I think when you're playing a single player map and your path breaks like that, and it doesn't do the expected behavior, it gives you anxiety, you know, a certain level of anxiety of like, okay, well, I'm supposed to go that way, I guess I got to get an alternate route. And I remember playing that and being unsure of like, wow, okay, am I ever going to go back over there? Which of course I won't spoil it for anybody, but yeah, it's a cool idea.
So there were a couple of those where I got a bit of inspiration from him. I remember if you take the courtyard, for example, where you have the bell tower and the exit door as well. I mean, he just comes up with these crazy ideas that I don't know. Personally, I'm not very good at gameplay mechanics. I don't have the most brilliant ideas when it comes to gameplay. I'm pretty boring in that regard. I guess I'm more of a sort of environment designer. I like to build pretty things. The feedback from him was obviously had a big impact on the map, I think, when it comes to the gameplay. So, yeah, that's might be interesting to for you and some people, I guess.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, and I think you probably will tell us about Sepulchre too, or Forgotten Sepulchre, because it started out, and I had read about it before I played it, and it started out as an E1 M3 kind of tribute or remix, or what, you'll explain it, but that's my favorite map. I love, you know, Necropolis. So tell us a little bit about that, because it really kind of started and then it kind of changed hands. And what was the story behind that? What was the genesis of Sepulchre?
So that's a pretty long story, I would say. But
So you got to set the record straight, though.
Yeah. So I switched over to Quake 1, as I said. So I started making sort of my first Quake map, which was supposed to be a remake for the Necropolis, as you said. And, you know, started hammering on that map for a couple of months. I was very obsessed with working on it. I was very much into the project. So I spent, I don't know, 3 or 4 months building it. So I had a start, I had the whole map sort of finished, I had an ending and all of that. And then I decided to post it on the Funk message board. And I was a bit of a newcomer. So it was, I would say, I was nervous, but it was, I didn't know what people were thinking about the map as I was going to post it. And for some reason, people seemed to like the map for what it was. I think it was really chaotic in its original form because I was learning new things as I was building the map, which meant that I had to, you know, kind of go back to the starting area and add new things that I've now learned in the later stages of the map. So I think that made the map more messy than it probably would have been if I had built it today. So it was a very chaotic map. I think it had a lot of personality in its original form. But for some reason, the people at the Ark and Dimensions mod liked the map. And how it looked. So they contacted me and said, hey, this looks great. We would like to pick up the map for the mod and start developing it for Arcane Dimensions. So that's the start of it, I guess. So should I continue the whole story?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'd like to know, you know, your role with SOC and everything like that too, because it is turned into a massive map that a lot of people like. So yeah, the more the better.
Yeah. So I mean, you can imagine I don't have any experience when it comes to game development. I don't have a background in this, so I'm just a fairly fresh hobbyist mapper who is contacted by someone who is an ex-professional. There are people who are, you know, very knowledgeable when it comes to level design and game development. So it's a bit of a shock for me to get involved. But at first, how I worked with Sock was he would sort of go over certain areas in the map and say, you know, this looks great, but for gameplay, it's not that great. You have to change certain things. You have to move things, open up spaces, and make it more optimized for gameplay. So that was the main thing that we worked together with at the beginning. And then we sort of gradually started adding more things to the map. I remember that we, you know, eventually, we passed the point where it didn't look like Episode 1 Map 3 anymore. It just looked like something else. It was pretty chaotic. His influence on the map made it, you know, made it transform quite a bit. And yeah, so gradually it changed into something else.
Was there a point where Sock approached you or you approached him and you guys just said like, or agreed on, hey, we're gonna make this map as big and crazy and full of secrets as we can? Like, how did you have that conversation? Because I mean, the map is really unlike a lot of other Quake maps in that regard. Like, some other maps will have a lot of secrets, but this is like, there's nooks and crannies all over the place.
Yeah. I think that was a gradual thing. It didn't happen all at once. You know, you call it feature creep when things, you know, you start to, okay, we could add this, we could maybe have this, this is cool. Okay, so more features started to creep into the map as we were going over the development of it. So I think that was a gradual thing, how it ended up. But I remember working with him for that entire summer. I mean, these were intense development weeks, especially for me who has no background. I don't know a lot about the grind.
Right.
You know, it's a lot of hard work to working with game development and so I didn't know a lot about that. So it was 12-hour days, 7 days a week.
Wow.
Waking up, mapping all day, thinking about what to do the next day with the map. And he was working in Radiant. I was working in Quark, which meant that I had to send my scraps to him and he would revise it in Radiant. Things were off grid. He had to clean it up and make his thing, and then he sent it back to me, and I sort of glued it into the map. So it was an interesting, work process in that regard.
No kidding. Yeah. You definitely had the crunch time going on. You weren't even getting paid for it.
Yeah, it was essentially full time.
That's not fair. I just don't see that fair. It's terrible. The taskmaster.
Yeah, but I think both of us were very obsessed with the project. I think there was a lot of passion with the map from both sides. But that summer was pretty rough. I work as a teacher, so I get the summers off. So basically, that was my entire summer, just working.
Oh man!
Yeah. I don't regret it. It was a cool experience making it. But once the summer was over, I sort of had to surrender. I didn't have that amount of time to spend on hobby level designing. Real life was catching up. So I had to sort of surrender the project to him, not unwillingly. I said to him, like, I don't have more time to give. And if you want to continue the project, I'm happy to hand it over to you. And so he did. And I think his development after that is massive. I mean, we're talking, I don't know how many hours. He mentioned a number like 1,000 hours or 800 hours. That he put into it.
Wow.
And basically a full year of development went into the map after that summer. So it's pretty insane what he...
Yeah, definitely. I was going to ask you, what percentage do you think the map was actually developed at before you handed it back to him and got back to teaching and whatnot?
Yeah, so I don't know if you can count it in brush count, but when I handed over the map, it was 17,000 brushes or so. Was still pretty complex, complicated map. But then he took it to the next level. He made it into this, what was it, 65,000 brick monster that, just absolute massive map. 17,000 into 65,000. So what are we talking about?
Wow.
20%.
Well, a lot of those brushes are bricks though.
Yeah.
I think like that's kind of an in mapper thing, but we've all made maps here. So
I remember we in the starting area of the map, if you look up to the left, there is a very detailed brick wall. That's actually a wall that I spent a lot of time building. I think I spent 6 or 7 hours just making that mm-hmm. side. And I remember when I was going to send my scrap to him, because he was going to do something with that area as well, I forgot to add in that detailed wall. So it was just sort of a square, boring wall. And he was very disappointed when he came back to me and said, like, what about this wall? It looks terrible. It's just a square. It's just a square block. What happened? And I didn't know that I didn't send him my detailed.
Oh, no.
What are you talking about? I spent 7 hours on this wall. It looks great. It was
I love that story. That's cool.
Intense.
So now you, just not to change too many gears, but I've noticed, and I know I'm not expecting any promises or anything like that, but I know you're dabbling in another game. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so you know, for a long time now, I haven't had much free time to spend on mapping. Sort of just been lurking. But I picked up Hexen 2 just recently and started dabbling a little bit with mapping for Hexen 2. And for me, it's essentially about time management, because I don't have a lot of time to map anymore, or at least not currently. So Quake is at a place where it's, you know, people are really expecting great things when it comes to a Quake map. The standards mm-hmm. are super high. Releasing a Quake map these days is pretty, I mean, it depends on where you put your bar, obviously. But I think a lot of mappers feel pressure because of all the big releases that are sort of hanging over the Quake 1 scene.
Yeah.
So maybe moving to another game that doesn't have the massive releases, you could work on some smaller projects, some retro maps, keeping it simple. So that's sort of my thought with Hexen 2. Maybe I can make a small hub that is, you know, maybe a bit better looking than the original game, but not too crazy. So yeah, that was my thought process of just dabbling a little bit with Hexen 2.
Yeah, there's a really small core that you have probably discovered of people that are doing content for it, but it's kind of all over the place. And I love seeing it kind of congeal and come together, because that's on my list. You know, I definitely am interested in mapping for that, because you still get kind of that feeling of a Quake type of, you know, good solid first person shooter physics and everything, but there's a lot of extra goody, you know, storytelling that you can do, and traveling back and forth between the areas and things like that, that makes it pretty exciting. So I think hopefully we'll see a little bit of a splash here coming up. I know I played, we had Bloodshot on, and he did a thing for Hexen, Shadow of Chaos, I think it was. We were joking about the name because it was pretty generic, but I'm not sure if you played that, but it's well worth your time. It shows what you can do with Hexen 2, and quite a bit of fun. So that inspired me to kind of like, I gotta put that on the to-do list, is I've gotta, you know, get involved at H2. So
yeah, I actually haven't played this mod, but I've heard about it, so I'm going to check it out eventually.
Definitely worth your time. It's kind of fairly epic.
Okay. I still need to play the original game as well. It was a long time ago since I played it. So I think I have to get back into Hexen 2.
Yeah, same here. And I keep getting stuck in the same place.
Yeah.
You can definitely get stuck in that one. So have a little walkthrough handy.
Yeah.
Oh, so... For Quake 2, that was with Quark, that was the first time you touched an editor, or did you ever try any of the source or gold source stuff back when you were a player?
Nope. I think when I played Unreal, when I was a kid, you got the Unreal editor. So I remember that we played around with that one, but not since I've, been an adult. I haven't mess around with any editor. So the Quark editor was the first one for me. So, you know, for that reason, I think it's a good thing that you have your sort of tutorial videos out now. If someone is thinking about starting mapping, I can tell you from my own experience, don't pick Quark as your first editor.
Definitely a trench broom.
Yes. So there are better options. But that was my first editor. And it does have some cool features. MFX showed me a few cool things you could do with terrain. It has some really crazy terrain editing tools that you can't really do with the other editors. But yeah, I wouldn't say overall it's not a great option.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a fantastic tool, and it's the one editor that you could do a ton of content in other games. A lot of the focus was as many games as you possibly could. So you could almost name a Quake or an in-tech engine that it supports. So it's pretty impressive that in that way. So let's say if you want to do like Soldier Fortune 2 or something, Soldier Fortune, there's game packs for that, et cetera. So that in that regard, it's really good. Also under the hood, there's a lot of things. I know there are tools like for, I guess, spirals and arches and things like that, which they are cool, but the UI on that is really tough to wrap your head around. In fact, that was the one editor that I literally just could not make anything in. I just didn't take the time. I'm sure with time I would have been able to, but out of all these other editors, like, you know, Cool and I started on Quest way back when, and, you know, all these other mapping tools, I could do something, but Quark, I've never been able to do anything. So I use it to look, I use it to look at models and other things that are inside the pack files. So,
yeah. Well, I think if you look at some of the maps that MFX have made, I mean, to me, he's a bit of a wizard when it comes to bending brushwork in different ways. And I think Quark is the key to him, at least that's my impression, that he can do some pretty crazy things when it comes to just that specific editor. But that's, you know, that's I don't know. Have you had him on the podcast to talk about?
We have not. He's on our list.
Not yet.
It's always fun because, you know, I don't know how often he does, but, you know, every so often, maybe once a year, twice a year, you'll see a screenshot of something he's working on. You're like, oh my God, look at that. And it just completely.
Okay, I'm, you know, I need to.
Yeah, you literally stop in your tracks and go, what am I looking at? This is unbelievable. And it's just a screenshot. So, yeah, he's using Quark to its fullest capabilities.
Sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll have him on. We'll entice him on.
We'll get him for sure at some point. So, Giftmacher, I'm interested to know, are you playing anything now? Like any newer games catch your fancy?
Yeah. So I'm still into competitive games. If I can play something where I can compete with my friends or with other people, that's pretty much where I go. I don't have too much time for single player games. I have a hard time settling down with a single player experience for some reason. So I sort of stay with the competitive games. Okay. Apex Legends is a game that I play quite a bit.
It's fun.
It's a bit different than other games that I've played before. What do you call that genre of games?
Battle Royale.
Battle Royale, yeah, sure. So that's a cool game that I play. Play StarCraft 2 still.
Okay.
Not as good as I was, but I'm still trying.
it's cool. I actually like Apex quite a bit. I know that it's, at least in my channel and other channels, I've seen people have, especially the Quake community, have given it some flack. But guys, it's free to play. Give it a shot. I think you'll have more fun with it than you think.
Yeah.
That's the only battle royale I've played, but there's a reason, because it enticed me with the art direction and just kind of the solid feeling of it. And yeah, that's the one that I've played and enjoyed quite a bit. I do like the 3-player team aspect of it too. That's a cool aspect of that game. But we just watched the EA thing yesterday with some of the new, they're bringing in a new legend and some new modes and things like that, which I would not be good at. it definitely looks pretty cool. I mean, the new weapons. So it's nice to see that that's not in decline, and hopefully people will give it a shot.
Yeah, so I think actually there is a resurgence going on with Apex Legends. It was going down for a bit, but I think it's coming back. So hopefully they can keep it alive, keep adding content to it. I think it's one of the better games that I've played for a long time, especially when it comes to shooter games. So they've definitely made something right with the content that they have. When it comes to other games, I don't know, are you excited about any other games that is coming up? Ask questions?
Not one.
Nothing.
No, there's so many on the horizon. It's hard to pick just one. with us recording this with you in the midst of E3, the only conference that has happened, as Dump Truck mentioned, was the EA one, and they just showed off Jedi Fallen Order. I know it's a single player game, but it looks amazing, and it's by the same guys who, you know, made Apex Legends. So I'm definitely excited about that one.
Yeah, anything Star Wars related, I usually like those games.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, looking back at the Dark Forces games, I was a big fan of those, Jedi Knight and those games. So it could be good, I guess.
This one looks like a kind of a Dark Souls light and meets Uncharted, which is kind of interesting. So there's environmental puzzles and things, and then they sprinkle in this kind of, you know, mini boss kind of combat mechanic, I guess you know. And exactly, yeah. My kids play Dark Souls and Demon Souls, but that's not my thing. But I'm definitely interested in that game because it seems like there's a ton of variety and you're never really locked into one style. You know, I was impressed by what I saw yesterday. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is Star Wars. So.
Yeah, my concern with the modern games, when I see them, is that they seem to be pretty linear in nature. When mm-hmm. I look at the... I saw that trailer yesterday as well when it came to the Star Wars game. And it's just very clear-cut, very linear in the things mm-hmm. they're showing. So here's an obstacle. Okay, use your force push to, you know, push something down, walk across. And it just seems... I mean, that's how they are designing a lot of these new games, to be very, very linear. You get a lot of help. You can't really wander off... as we could in the old games, we had to sort of find.
Right.
So that's my concern.
Yeah.
Modern games.
No, that is a good concern to have for sure. It's with Star Wars, I guess it's tough too, because it's, you know, they obviously want to tell a story. And of course, everybody who makes a game or a book or a movie or whatever wants it to be canon with the Star Wars story. So I guess they can't stray from the path too much if they want it to be canon, but, another game I know that me and many other people are waiting to hear more about too is Doom Eternal. So that should be pretty promising when they show more of that.
Yeah, I haven't played the new Doom. Actually, not the what do you call the last one?
Doom 2016. Right, usually people recur. Yeah, that's actually a really fun game. Beautiful,
yeah, it's really
beautiful
good.
Level design. The level designs are really cool. It does get a touch repetitious, but. Overall, I enjoyed it. I played through the whole thing, and it's one of those games I keep thinking, God, I really need to go fire that back up just because they have speed runs and different, you know, find mm-hmm. all the little, you know, Funko Pop guys all over the level. Those are kind of fun little challenges because very much in the vein of other id games where you have secrets and it's fun to find the secrets. So mm-hmm. I would recommend trying it, especially some of the level design you'd really appreciate. It's pretty staggering some of the vistas that are in the game, and then you go and visit all those vistas, sort of like an MFX map.
Yeah, okay.
It reminds me, yes, sort of that kind of some of those styles. So that's a cool one. I'm looking forward to Doom Eternal just because I have a feeling there. We'll hopefully find out tonight if how much multiplayer, you know, focus on multiplayer they've given it. I don't know if they have or not, but you have to assume they're going to kind of take another stab at it and maybe bring that up a little bit. And then, because I played it Doom 2016, but it was like, nah, whatever, it's okay, it's fun. But I'm sure it'll just be bigger and crazier and more of a badass game, because they knocked that one out of the park, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Everyone was nervous, like, it's gonna suck, and you know, but I think the only stumbling block might have been just a little bit of the multiplayer, and then some of the arena stuff happens a little too much, but mm-hmm. still great.
It did have a map editor, right? The Doom,
correct, and that was a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, it's called Snap Map, and you would have set rooms and hallways and things, and so you could slap things together. And people did do some crazy stuff. But I think the cool thing about that was the scripting that you could do. I didn't do a whole lot of this, but I messed around with it. And they had this visual editor where you put these entities in, kind of very similar to what we do with Quake 1 editing, and you go in and it does a behavior and just, you know, shut the lights off when he crosses this threshold, things like that, that you could kind of create things. And then they took it a step further where you could make your own mini games and things like that. So you could make a co-op type of experience. But I saw basketball, like you play basketball using, you know, items and things like that, and actually keep score and all that stuff. So it was pretty deep. I know a lot of people enjoyed it, that's for sure. So I don't know if they'll do that with this new one. I'm assuming yes.
Yeah, the main problem with it, though, the fact that more people will play your custom Quake 1 map than we're going to play your Snap map. So at least that was my experience. I would come back and from my Snap and I would see like, oh, one person played it over the course of the past 4 days. Cool. All right.
that's terrible.
Okay. Yeah.
And then you find out that one person was you. So it's but yeah, it was cool. It just left a little bit to be desired. Hey, Giftmacher, I wanted to ask you about where you live, actually. You could say, if I pronounce this correctly, Halmstad. Is that how you say it?
Halmstad, okay. Is what we say in Swedish. But
okay,
yeah, small town in Sweden. Not a lot of people here. It's 100,000 people, just about. So yeah, just
lucky. Yeah, I'm surrounded by I think 11 million people.
Wow.
I don't even know what it is now, Los Angeles, so it's crazy. Here
I've heard about the sort of the lines you have to be in when you go to work in the morning if you have a car. Be in the sort of the car lines.
Definitely car culture in Southern California kind of gone wrong. It's just everywhere. I'm very lucky that I live 2 miles from work, so I walk about 2 or 3 days a week, and trying to clear my mind and everything takes, you know, about a half an hour, and it's just a nice little walk. I'm very spoiled compared to all my, you know, neighbors and friends who have commutes. I mean, I have one friend that just got a job in Santa Monica, I guess, and that's heinous because there's just no good way to go. You don't have alternate routes. You basically have, you can go on the streets or you can go on the freeway and you're sitting there. It's like a parking lot. It's really tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wears down on you too. You know, I told my wife, if I had to change jobs and work on what we call the West Side, the other side of the hill, I wouldn't do it. We'd have to move because I'm not going to live my life in a car.
Right. That's sort of the reality for some people, right? They have to be in the car for a couple of hours every morning
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
But yeah, where you live, Giftmacher, I sort of make a habit out of when we find out where people live and, you know, a good portion of the people we talk to live across the pond somewhere. And I always love looking up their towns just to see what they look like. And your place looks absolutely beautiful.
It does have a couple of good features. We have a few beaches, actually. So the weather is a little bit better down here because we are sort of pretty far down south when it comes to Sweden. Usually Sweden is pretty cold. We don't have a lot of warmth even during the summers. We have decent summers, but they're not that fantastic. So down here in the south, it's a slightly bit better than up north. But yeah,
Is it the Swedish Riviera?
I wouldn't call it that.
I love the tall ships. I see. Do you ever go see the tall ships? Do they come through? Because I'm just a sucker for tall ships. I see a shot there.
Well, yeah, I guess sometimes we do have a summer cottage within our family that is at a better place where you can see a few ships and things like that. But at least it's a very safe town. Not a lot of bad things happening.
I think I might have to visit and check it out for retirement.
Yeah.
But just don't ask me to play StarCraft though.
Right.
I don't know. StarCraft 3 might be out by then, Dump Truck. You might be able to cope by then because it'll be a linear single player experience where you use force push. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. What are some of the things that you would like to see happen with the Quake engine? Because this is just something that started. And I won't go into too much detail, but there's talk about trying, just making an attempt to encourage more development on the source ports, because right now, like Quake Spasm is not seeing any development. Mark V is kind of stalled, and really the only engine that sees constant updates is FTE. And so we're hoping that, you know, on Funk Message Board and elsewhere, that people we can entice people from outside. So is there anything that from like Quake 2, because you're so well versed in that you'd like to see in Quake 1 or some of these other technologies that you would like to see come over to a source port that would be fun for mapping or gameplay?
Right. When it comes to Quake 2, I think most of the things that are in Quake 2, haven't they been sort of been implemented into the Quake 1 compilers?
Things like bounce, right. And things like that are similar. Dirt map. I don't know about dirt mapping though. I don't think that.
No, I'm not sure if that is that even in Quake 2.
I don't think so. No.
Actually, what, if you I will say question, I would say if you could get some of the things that are in Quake 1 into Quake 2, that would make it interesting to, you know, Quake 2 mapping.
Like good movement.
No, oh yeah.
I'm joking.
It is terrible movement. Quake 2.
Yeah, it did. It always felt like I was walking through molasses when I was playing Quake 2. And I did love the design and the monsters. And this, it's definitely the sound in Quake 2. All the options that you had were really cool. I think the particles, what I'd like to see come from Quake 2 to Quake 1 is the particle effects, because there's so many different ones. I caught this YouTube video where this guy went through and just basically cataloged all the Quake 2 particle effects, and my mouth was just watering, like, God, this would be so nice to have in Quake 1. And then also there's one thing that I love in Quake 2 mapping where you would make a brush and that brush would emit light. So you could light an area with a brush,
right?
Which we don't have in Quake 1 because it's always point lights. Or surface lights. So you have a couple. You have like a primitive surface light, but that's just something like you see some of these screenshots. I don't know if you've seen recently. Someone's adding fog effects to Quake 2, and it looks really cool. And the map they showed had this beautiful glowing kind of texture that was almost like a Fulbright texture, but it had this beautiful glow to it. And I don't think you can do that kind of stuff in Quake 1 unless. Unless I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, obviously, I don't know too much about the technical stuff. But also, when it comes to the Quake 1 gameplay, I think that's... we have the mods, obviously. You can modify the gameplay that way. But personally, I would like to have options to sort of tell a story with a map rather than have the classic basic shooting gameplay that Quake 1 is sort of presenting. So even if you make this amazing looking map, it's still just Quake 1 kind of shooting your way through. I think Bloodshot made a cool map for the Jam X.
Yeah.
It changed the gameplay a bit or quite a bit. So I think different ways of telling a story now when we have the cool stuff that we have in the Quake engines. That's something that I look forward to if it's added.
Yeah, I think some people in the community might push against that, but I'm for right on board with you right there. It's definitely one of the reasons I did the mod that I'm working on, because right. I wanted just more, even just visual storytelling with like bodies and, you know, bodies and gibs and things that you could just place in the level easily like an entity. That's kind of what I wanted to do. But I guess Sock is working on it. I just saw this yesterday. Sock is putting a camera system into Arcane Dimensions 1.8, which will that kind of bodes well for what you're looking at, because you know, you'll be able to have these nice little cinematic triggered cinematics, which I love. You know, even if it's just like, go to this door, see, it's locked. I mean, even if it's something like that, I would love to be able to do that a lot easier.
I mean, if you have a puzzle in the map, you can sort of, you push a button and you can show that you've changed this bridge, now you need to go back and
right, Zelda style.
Exactly. So those things excites me a bit more. I think the Quake One sort of, even the weaponry is a bit lacking. You have the two nail guns, you have the super shotgun. It's I don't know. Once you get the rocket launcher, it gets OP. You can just smash your way through. I don't know. I do have a bit of a problem with the Quake One sort of basic, the basic setup of Quake One.
I have one last question. If you're, I am sorry if I cut you off there, but now you're working with impressionable young minds. What are the kids that you teach? What are their games of choice at these days? What are 16 to 19 year olds doing?
Well, unfortunately, it's not Quake One. I would be surprised if they even know what it was. I don't think they played it. So it's the new ones. It's Fortnite. It's the Apex Legends. CS:GO is big.
Cool.
Yeah. So those are the kind of games that play. Not the old ones. I don't think they don't know what the old games are.
It's like, what's a console? Why do I have to type things in to start a game?
Exactly.
Well, Giftmacher, it might be your job here to teach them. Be like, today, forget about all your lessons. We're talking about Quake.
Yeah.
Just blow their minds.
I have one word for you. Jib. Or is it Gib? Gonna have a philosophical discussion about how to pronounce that word.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dump Truck _DS.